This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, powered by the Family Research Council, your embassy of faith, family, and freedom in the heart of our nation's capital. Now, here's your host, FRC President Tony Perkins. Sitting in for Tony today is the producer of Washington Watch, Russ Jones.
You fight, fight, fight. And now only 2 years. That's a very short period. And by the time you start campaigning, it's a year. And now you got to go and fight again.
And that's President Trump trying to fire up the base. Indeed, I am Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch. It's great to be with you here today. So is the GOP ready for the 2018 midterm elections? Both President Trump and Vice President Pence addressed that topic at the Conservative Political Action Conference taking place this week in Washington, D.C. Longtime political consultant Ned Ryan, founder and CEO of American Majority, will be here to unpack the midterms. In the United States today is imposing its, you ready for this, largest package of sanctions against North Korea, intensifying pressure on North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons and missile programs. What does it mean? Retired Army Colonel David Maxwell and fellow at the Institute for Korean American Studies will be here to help answer that question. And a faith-based foster care program is at risk of losing its license. Unbelievable story. South Carolina Department of Social Services is challenging Miracle Hill Ministries to stop recruiting only Christian families. And later in the show, Betsy Tanner, an attorney, and along with her husband, is a foster care parent through Miracle Hill Ministries, and Beth Williams, Vice President of Children's Ministries at Miracle Hill, will be here to tell us all about that. And of course, towards the end of the show, we'll take your calls. All of this great content is on TonyPerkins.com. You can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins. You can follow me too, Russ Jones Speaks. That's at Russ Jones Speaks. Well, as I mentioned earlier today at CPAC in Washington, D.C., President Trump called for his biggest supporters to avoid complacency ahead of this year's midterm elections. It was fascinating, really. You know, I've been saying this for years. It seems like the Democrats never stop working. They never stop campaigning. And Republicans often work hard and then take a break and kick back. Well, President Trump actually called that out today, and Vice President Pence did the same yesterday. And it's really quite interesting to see this. And with us now is Ned Runyon. He's the founder and CEO of American Majority, a conservative political training institute whose mission is to identify and mold the next wave of liberty-minded candidates, grassroots activists, and community leaders. Ned, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yeah, no, great to be with you, Russ.
We've known each other for quite some time, and I've followed your work and wanted to have you on today. You know, it was just interesting. If I could just write a book on some of these things, because I'll have this idea and I'll share it, and then it's not the next day I'm hearing somebody else, high-level person, say this. And, you know, it was really interesting to hear President Trump. Well, matter of fact, before we start talking about it, let's listen to what President Trump said, the larger clip of that. Go ahead.
I'm trying to figure it out, because historically, if you win the presidency, you don't do well 2 years later. And you know what? We can't let that happen. And I know what happens. I finally figured it out. Nobody's been able to explain it. It just happens statistically almost all of the time for many years. What happens is you fight so hard to win the presidency. You fight, fight, fight. And now only 2 years. That's a very short period. And by the time you start campaigning, it's a year. And now you got to go and fight again, but you just won. So nobody has that same drive that they had. So you end up not doing that well because the other side is going, they're crazed. And by the way, they're crazed anyway, these people.
Ned, I know you've got lots to say about that, but yeah. He's on to it, isn't he?
No, he's totally on to it. I will say this, it does get exhausting. I mean, Dad was in the House for 10 years, and I was just telling somebody the other day, it seemed like you just got done with one election, and then a few months later, you started raising money for the next. It was just a vicious, nonstop cycle. But it is. I mean, it's the temptation is to rest on your laurels and kick back a little bit and say, hey, you know, we can take it easy. And you're right, the left never seems to stop. And they've actually been doing a good job, Russ, over the last year, year and a half of just going in, especially at the state legislative level in these special elections. And they've won dozens of these state legislative seats that have been, in many places, held by Republicans. So you can see this energy on the left. You can see them winning these state legislative districts, some of which went for Trump by almost 20 points. And you see them winning, you know, Democrats winning it by 10 points. So there's definitely a shift going on with some of the enthusiasm. But that all to say, I've seen some encouraging signs. Again, we're almost 9 months away still from the November elections. But, you know, you look at the congressional generic poll, it's definitely tightened up. Democrats were up 15 to 18 points middle of December. A poll came out last week showing Republicans up by a point. You know, the tax bill is helping to change the climate. New York Times grudgingly admitted a couple days ago that over half of the American people think the tax bill is a good idea. But I always tell people, listen, that in some ways the narrative and the larger narrative and what's taking place in the news on the national level is out of your control. All that you can do is what is in your control. And that's where you have to start executing the fundamentals, you know, raising the money, laying out a very metric system-driven approach to winning an election. So I tell these local candidates, the guys that we, you know, identify and train is, you know what, put down your metrics for doors and phones. Think about what your message is. Put all these basics in place and then put down a plan and then execute the plan, and you're going to better your chances of winning if you do the fundamentals and are disciplined. And so I tell people, especially at this point, first of all, we're basically a lifetime away from the November elections. Some of this stuff is out of your control. All that you can control are the things in front of you. Execute the fundamentals. And I got to tell you, I'm actually fairly encouraged over the last 4 to 6 weeks of seeing how Republicans have done a much better job on messaging, especially on the tax bill, the benefits to the American people. We're seeing, you know, obviously some of the press finally admitting it's a good thing. And, you know, now it just remains to see how Republicans are going to do over the next 6-7 months, because by the time they hit September, policy is pretty much done. It all becomes full-time campaign. Let's make sure they don't screw up on immigration. Let's make sure they don't screw up on the gun control debate. And let's see if they can get anything positive done and then go home and do the fundamentals and hopefully hold on to the House. But Trump is right. I mean, in first midterm, the party in the White House typically loses seats in the midterm. We've got a 24-seat majority in the House. The only problem is 23 of those districts, you know, are ones that Hillary won in 2016. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done, but I'm liking where the trends are headed.
And Ned, you said that. Why is that midterm, whatever president in the party is in office, why doesn't it usually go well?
Enthusiasm gap. You know, a lot of time, as Trump was saying, a lot of people that when you're in power, and think about it, Republicans hold the White House, they hold the House, they hold the Senate, they still hold 33 governorships. They're still in control of close to 70 of the state legislative chambers across the country. Republicans are at one of the most ascendant points they've ever been in history. So it causes you to be content and say, hey, we've got all the levers of power. At the same time, you know, like I was saying, it's not that big a margin in the House. There's a lot of very close, you know, districts, state legislative that, you know, Eric Holder and some of those on the left are really focused on. So it's an enthusiasm gap. But, you know, the thing that's encouraged me in the last week or two, I've looked at some of the polls. The enthusiasm gap is definitely shrinking. It was a huge advantage a couple months ago for the Democrats. Last poll I saw was about even. So, again, it's closing.
What are some of the challenges facing the Democrats?
Well, first of all, what is their message?
Exactly.
When I go on TV, I kind of tweak the Democrat I'm opposite from. I was like, you know, at some point you're gonna have to actually figure out what you're running on. Are you gonna run on the fact that not one of you voted for the tax plan?
Yes.
Are you going to run on resistance? Are you going to run on impeachment? Are you going to run on, hey, put us back in office so we can raise your taxes? I mean, what are you actually running on? And some of them will admit to me afterwards when we're off air, we actually don't know what the message is. And I'm like, at a certain point, you actually have to be for something to have people vote for you. And I think this is where Republicans can really take advantage of this and say, listen, we are talking about issues, whether it's getting more money back into the American people's pocketbooks, because, again, at the end of the day, a lot of Americans, when they go to vote, are driven by pocketbook issues. You know, is there more money in my pocket? Can I put more food on the table? Can I pay my mortgage? Can I do, you know, a few extra things in life, maybe go on a vacation? That's what Trump and the Republicans have been talking about. And a lot of times the Democrats are talking about, I don't know, climate change, transgender rights, whatever the pet issue is of their left donors.
And yesterday, Vice President Mike Pence, he was kind of chiming in on the same notes. Let's listen.
You know, it would be a disaster for our cause if Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House again. But we're not going to let it happen. This movement should know it's a very real threat, because the other side knows exactly what's at stake between now and the end of this year. The far left has watched with dismay as we've dismantled the liberal legacy of the last administration and turned this country around. And they're doing everything they can to try and win back the Congress next November. I mean, we don't have to wonder what would happen if the party of Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer won the House and the Senate this November, do we? I mean, remember the last time it happened? I do. I was actually there the last time Democrats ran the Congress, and they nearly ran America into the ground. They raised taxes, they cut the military, they tried to pass cap and trade, they gave us Dodd-Frank and the Obamacare nightmare. I mean, they thought they could borrow, spend, and bail their way back to a growing America. In the past few years, Democrats have only fallen further to the left. Their platform, as we all know, can be summed up in one word: resist. Resist our policies, resist our president, and resist the results that you and I and our entire movement have fought so hard to achieve. So it's up to us to stand up to them and stand up for the American people and the progress that we've made. But the other side is motivated. They're mobilized.
And Ned, that's the key word, mobilized. So, it's very, very clear that President Trump and Vice President Pence, they're putting out the clarion call.
It's good. And it's time to kind of hit that button and say, I know we're just in February, but we shouldn't take things for granted. Because, I mean, Pence is right. He forgot to add to that list impeachment proceedings.
But that's right.
No, you could be guaranteed if Nancy Pelosi takes back the House, the Trump agenda would go on complete dead stop for the next 2 years. There would really not be any good conservative, any remotely conservative policy coming out of the House. But on top of that, there's enough of the Democrat caucus in the House that are beating the drums for impeachment proceedings that even if they didn't take the Senate back, they'd probably still try to make Trump's life miserable. So, you know, it really is about let's understand what the implications are. If you like what you're seeing in the first year, and actually I love what I'm seeing in the first year with Trump of, you know, cutting the regulations, conservative judges, tax bill, all this stuff. If you want more of the same, Republicans have to keep the majority. But I'll say this, Ross, I've written about this a little bit. The Democrats have to win in 2018 because I feel like they're really on a razor's edge. And I want to say this because, you know, midterms are midterms, all of that. But you look at some of these trends that are taking place. Democrats are in serious trouble as a national party. I've started to call them the coastal regional party. You mm-hmm. look at the electoral map, they've got strong on the coast and a few patches in the middle where they're strong. If they don't take back the House or make some strides in the state legislative races in 2018 and actually, you know, are still in the minority in the House and still don't have, you know, haven't made gains in the state legislatures post-election, I think there's a real crisis in where they're headed as a party.
Well, Ned, thank you so much. We're out of time. I knew you would have great insights, and thank you for taking time to join us here on Washington Watch. We appreciate it. We'll have you back on.
Sounds good. I appreciate it, Russ.
All right. Thank you. We've been talking to Ned Runyon, founder and CEO of American Majority. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. You're listening to Washington Watch and tough new sanctions on North Korea. What's it all mean? Well, Southeast Asia expert David Maxwell, he's going to be here when we return. I look forward to seeing you around the corner.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, That's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As Senior Director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
It's Friday, and you're listening to Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. This is powered by the Family Research Council. It's a joy to be with you today. Man, this has been a big news week. It's been a big news day. But today, President Trump announced the toughest U.S. sanctions ever on North Korea. The Treasury Department will take action to further cut off sources of revenue and fuel that the regimen uses to fund its nuclear program and sustain its military by targeting about 56 vessels, shipping companies, and trade businesses that are assisting North Korea in evading sanctions. With us now is retired Army Colonel David Maxwell with multiple tours in South Korea, a fellow at the Institute for Korean American Studies. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Good to be with you. Good to have a fellow member of the Army here. I serve in the Mississippi State Guard, which is affiliated with the Army here in the great state of Mississippi. So it's good to have you on the show. Well, big sanctions, and U.S. presidential advisor Ivanka Trump is over for the closing Olympic ceremonies. Lots of drama today with this. What are you seeing?
Yes, there is.
What are you seeing, David?
Well, first of all, I think the announcement of the sanctions are very, very important. I mean, the administration's campaign of maximum pressure and engagement, which we are willing to engage, but maximum pressure is really critical. I mean, these entities and what these ship-to-ship transfers have been doing, transferring oil and needed supplies, it's keeping the regime functioning. But it all goes to support one thing, its military capabilities, and in particular, its nuclear weapons program and its missile development program. And so sanctioning these entities is an important step forward because despite the UN sanctions, and other U.S. Unilateral sanctions, they have never been enough, despite the fact that, in the last year, we have brought more pressure, more sanctions on North Korea than ever. We ever have in history, which is really important. So this is an important step forward, and it is going to impact the regime. I doubt it will change its behavior and its decision making, but cutting off the flow of these goods and in addition to hard currency, it will hinder their nuclear and missile programs.
So as we see, they're focusing on the trade on the international waters, the sanctions specifically targeting the shipping industry. But it seems like North Korea just is notorious for finding ways to cheat.
Well, that's true. And not only ways to cheat, and of course, supported by other countries. And one of the important things about this, these sanctions, anybody who is any business that is doing business with these entities, 27 entities, 28 vessels, and the single individual who I don't know the name of yet, those are the specific sanctions from the Secretary of the Treasury there. But anybody doing business with them will no longer be allowed to do business with the United States. So that's going to affect China, Russia, and other countries around the world. And so that's an important step forward. But, North Korea finds a way to cheat. They are very adaptive, very creative. They are conducting illicit activities around the world. They have what's called Department 39, which is an organization that traffics in drugs. It traffics in counterfeit money, counterfeit medications, counterfeit cigarettes. It manages the slave labor overseas. And so all of that has been used to gain hard currency. But one of the creative ways that we're seeing the North gain funds is through the cyber domain. It has been stealing money. It's manipulating Bitcoin. It has allegedly attacked the Bangladesh banks through the Philippines, and siphoning off millions of dollars through cyber crime and cyber activities. And so the regime has proven to be very resilient, very creative, and we've got to approach this on multiple fronts. But these sanctions today are one major part of the effort.
Now, you've been on multiple tours, I think some five tours in South Korea. What if this doesn't move the needle? I mean, won't North Korea try to sell technology, maybe even use it for blackmail? I mean, what could happen?
Well, of course, and they have sold it. They are a proliferator. I mean, you look at the weapons in Syria, in Iran, in Pakistan, the missiles all have development, parts and pieces, if not whole missiles, developed by the North Koreans. Why did Israel destroy the developing nuclear power plant in Syria? Because it was being built with North Korean help. So North Korea is a serial proliferator. We have the Proliferation Security Initiative. Some 105 countries have signed up to the Proliferation Security Initiative. But North Korea continues to proliferate. Moving the needle, I'm not optimistic that this is going to lead to any immediate changes. By cutting off, further strangling the regime's ability to obtain funds, it is going to degrade their capabilities. At some point, it could lead them to try to conduct some limited changes in their behavior. And of course, their actions at the Olympics were all about trying to show a good face, to try to have sanctions relief. I mean, they are working so hard on South Korea and the Republic of Korea to try to get them to break the sanctions, reopen the Kaesong Industrial Complex. Their hope is that President Moon would do what his mentors did, Kim Dae-jung and Roh Moo-hyun, with the Sunshine Policy and the Peace and Prosperity Policy, the naive belief that by giving them aid, unreciprocated aid, it would change their behavior. And of course, that lasted from 1997 to 2007. And of course, we know in 2006, what did North Korea do? Detonated its first nuclear weapons test.
Well, David, we're out of time. So a wealth of information. Thank you so much for being on Washington Watch. We appreciate your insights. That was retired Army Colonel David Maxwell, very fascinating. Be watching the Olympics, see how Ivanka does. Should be interesting optics. Well, coming up next, the Christian foster care organization in South Carolina is under attack. We'll talk about it when we return.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Tuned in to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, the producer of this program, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Tony's the president of the Family Research Council. Well, on deck now, the South Carolina Department of Social Services is challenging Miracle Hill Ministries to stop recruiting only Christian families, and more specifically, threatening to withdraw the license of Miracle Hill Ministries, a faith-based organization in upstate area of South Carolina. But here's the good news. Governor Henry McMaster is siding with Miracle Hill Ministries, who recruits and trains Christian foster families. We've got two guests on with us here today. With us now is Betsy Tanner, an attorney, and along with her husband is a foster care parent through Miracle Hill, and Beth Williams, Vice President of Children's Ministries at Miracle Hill. Betsy and Beth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, let's first start with Betsy. Betsy, this caught our attention at the Family Research Council, saw your column, and I think I read you have had, 11-some foster children and have done so through Miracle Hill, and your husband's a pastor. Tell us, how did we get here?
Well, that's a great question. My husband and I decided to become foster parents a little over 5 years ago. And, the answer is fairly simple. We listen to the biblical mandate and calling to care for the vulnerable in our community. We had a room in our house, and we decided to open up and take them, take kids in and love them. While hopefully their families could work to get them back and be reunified with their families. So that was the main reason, is so that we could live out the biblical calling to care for the orphan.
And Beth Williams, who you are the vice president of Children's Ministries at Miracle Hill. You have been seeing the legislative side of this and the internal workings of the agency there. The irony, I would say, I have known so many people over the years who are Christians who have Beth and her husband's exact story, but yet wanting to shut you down. How is that going, and what kind of conversations have you been having?
Well, it's been going very well. Thank you for asking. The legislators and the governor, South Carolina, they've just been wonderful. They've been working with us to seek a resolution. The governor has reached out to the Department of Health and Human Services in Washington as he's working on finding a solution for us. And so everything, has been going well as we seek to bring remedy to this situation.
And Beth, why do you think you have been specifically targeted? Is it simply because you are presenting a Christian worldview to the folks seeking to be foster parents?
I don't believe that's why we've been specifically targeted or that we are being specifically targeted. I think that just based on the information the Department of Social Services received in our state, that they are interpreting something that maybe is just different than, we've had in the past. And so they received something from the Department of Health and Human Services, some policy changes that they're trying to follow. And so we very much respect what they're doing. And they're definitely partnering with us in this as well, trying to seek a resolution to this issue. So I don't know that it's specifically coming after us for that. It's just it was a policy change. It's my understanding it was a policy change that went into effect last year.
And what was that policy?
I don't have a specific one that was sent to us. It's just listed in Governor McMaster's letter that he sent to on behalf of Miracle Heal that states that the Department of Health and Human Services did require the Department of Social Services within our state to comply to the regulation that said there we're not allowed to discriminate on behalf of recruitment and licensing of families for any participation in a federally funded program.
Mm-hmm. Now, surely Miracle Heal isn't the only licensing organization.
No, it's not. And so there are other faith-based providers in the state of South Carolina that are also standing alongside us. And so we have a lot of support. The legislators are working to remedy this for all of us within the state.
Now, Betsy, in your column, which was very well done, by the way, you write there has never been a more urgent need for foster families in South Carolina. Is that what you, Miracle Heal served 418 children last year?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, we have an urgent need. And honestly, I'm hoping since this has become public, that it will actually draw attention to the need for foster families in South Carolina. There's a need nationally, but specifically in South Carolina, from the Department of Social Services website, they need about 1,500 more foster families in South Carolina to provide loving homes for kids. And so there's this great need, hopefully this can turn out to be positive for all involved and draw attention to that need, because Christian and hopefully Christian families can continue to exercise their associational rights to partner with Miracle Heal and other Christian agencies, but also anybody that wants to foster can get licensed through other agencies, such as the Department of Social Services, who has no religious requirement whatsoever.
Well, can you two hold on? We're facing a hard break. Can you hold on and come back with us?
Yes.
Sure.
All right.
Yes, thank you.
We're talking about foster care in South Carolina, and we're going to continue this with Betsy Tanner and Beth Williams. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Don't go away. We're going to continue this when we return.
What does sex trafficking, abortion, and pornography have in common? A lot, as it turns out, and all three are on the rise across the world. Today, almost 45.8 million people live in slavery around the world, and around 4.5 million people are slaves in the sex industry. Those who consume pornography are much more likely to seek women for paid sex, many of whom are victims of sex trafficking. Each click of pornography creates demand for more pornography and brings in a profit to the sex industry. The demand causes traffickers, pimps, and those involved in the sex industry to abuse their victims by filming them in sex acts. To learn more about the link between these issues and to find out how you can help stop it, go to frc.org/traffic. Again, that's frc.org/traffic.
Gender reassignment surgery. Once rare and unusual, it is now becoming more and more common. Across the nation, transgender activists are pushing for this costly, extreme, and unproven procedure to be declared medically necessary so that it can be paid for with taxpayer dollars. The problem for these activists is that the evidence is not on their side. In 2016, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services examined 33 studies on the subject and declared that there was not enough evidence to determine whether gender reassignment surgery improved health outcomes. One study found that those who had undergone gender reassignment surgery showed a suicide rate that was 19 times higher than the general population. Declaring gender reassignment surgery to be medically necessary is not only inaccurate, but dangerous. To view FRC's full report on this important issue, visit frc.org/surgery. Again, that's frc.org/surgery.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God. But culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
You're listening to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. And we're talking about South Carolina Department of Social Services been challenging Miracle Hill Ministries to stop recruiting only Christian families, which I just find astonishing. You know, I've known a number of folks who have been foster parents and Christians. It's just is Betsy Tanner, who is a on the phone with us, as well as Beth Williams, said that they were just simply trying to be faithful to the gospel, but yet here is a government entity in South Carolina, of all places, who wants to challenge the very people who feel called to be a foster parent. Betsy and Beth, welcome back to the show. Thanks for holding on. And Betsy, let me, you know, I'm sure it's not easy to be a foster parent, but yet you do it out of a calling. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, being a foster parent is really difficult. I don't think everybody should be a foster parent.
Right. It's not for everybody.
But it's certainly out of a calling, and for our family and many more. We have about 11 or 12 foster families in our church that my husband pastors. It's certainly a calling. And we have chosen to partner with Miracle Hill, and one of the main reasons my husband and I decided to foster with through Miracle Hill rather than just through the state is because of their Christian staff. When they come for quarterly visits or sometimes monthly visits in our home, and they pray with us every time. And they encourage us that the reason we are fostering and the reason we're going through the difficulties with our kids or working through the system is because of the gospel, and we're putting the gospel on display. And that is so encouraging as foster parents to keep going and keep up the good work. And so that's one of the main reasons we chose Miracle Hill, and I would want to see them to be able to continue with that mission and motivation.
Now, Beth, I understand the governor's office is working with the Department of Health and Human Services to get a waiver of requirements that adversely affect religious entities, including the one you're with, Miracle Hill. And this just points out why elections matter. Thankfully, you have a governor who applauds your work and supports your organization and is coming to your defense. Now, apparently you've received a provisional license for 6 months instead of a year. Is that right?
That is correct. We've received our provisional license, so we're still able to operate while we work through this issue. But it is really something that needs, you know, attention quickly, and the governor is taking it seriously, as well as Washington is helping him as well fit this resolution, because it is right here, and we have to find resolution swiftly.
Now, Beth, I was reading that Miracle Hill is the largest foster care program in South Carolina, but yet. You know, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been at it?
Miracle Hill has actually been providing foster care in South Carolina since 1988 is when they began recruitment and licensing families. They actually became licensed under the Department of Social Service in 1995. And so today we do have over 240 foster families, and just the 9 counties of the upstate, and last year we served 418 children, foster children, in those homes.
Wow. It's not like you just started yesterday.
No, it is something, again, as Betsy was mentioning, it is a calling, and so for Miracle Hill, we just want to stand alongside the Christians who feel that calling and really that obligation that we feel as Christians to take care of the orphans, as we're ordered to do in James 1:27. And so it is our privilege as an organization to just walk alongside the foster parents and help them and support them and give them encouragement that they need.
Now, Betsy, you're also an attorney and a foster parent, foster care attorney. But from a legal perspective, do you feel like this is just another instance of religious liberty, religious freedom being under attack? You know, I asked earlier, surely there are other agencies in the state that aren't faith-based that someone could go to that didn't want that directive. Betsy?
That's right. I actually do believe this is a religious liberty issue. I believe that on a personal level, of constitutional right to association and religious freedom. And I believe it, on the level for Miracle Hill as well, and as a nonprofit organization. And, in South Carolina, if you're not a Christian, you can still be a foster parent. There, you can get licensed directly through the Department of Social Services. They have offices in every county in our state. And there's other organizations that nonprofit organizations that offer their child placing agencies where you can get licensed. So it's certainly not a matter of that non-Christians cannot be foster parents in South Carolina. They can. They have to. It's the same requirements as far as safety requirements and housing requirements and things like that for everybody. But anybody can submit to get licensed as a foster parent. It's just Christian families can choose to be associated with Miracle Hill or one of the other Christian agencies in South Carolina that licenses foster parents. And I believe that we have the legal right to do so. And it is a religious liberty issue that I hope we can work together for a positive resolution and ultimately for the children that we all serve.
Well, Betsy Tanner and Beth Williams, thank you so much for taking time to come on Washington Watch. We're going to give out the governor's phone number here in just a little bit and have folks call and thank him for standing with you. But would you please keep us in the loop and let us know how that's going?
We certainly will.
Yes, right. Thank you for having us.
Well, God bless you both, and you both have a blessed weekend. Thank you for what you do, and thanks for your time on the show today. Well, folks, this is one of those issues. We talk about them all the time, and sadly, these folks are standing in the gap. And give Governor McMaster there in South Carolina a call. That phone number is 803 800-734-2100. 803-734-2100. And thank him for his work with the HHS there to clarify that federal regulations allow for this religious freedom, and ask him to clarify that state regulations also permit religious freedom. Our listeners here on Washington Watch are really good at doing this. Give him a call, 803-734-2100. You're listening to Washington Watch, and I'm Russ Jones sitting in for Tony Perkins, and I want you to give me a call right now, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And Friendly Friday, what are you doing? We've talked about some major issues today. What are you doing to serve your community? Are you rising to the call of President Trump and Vice President Pence to be active, to push out and to give the clarion call of faith, family, and freedom? And also, I'd love to hear from a foster parent if we've got some listening on the line. What do you think about Betsy Tanner? They're in a church that has 11 foster parents in their congregation there in South Carolina. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And next week, we'll be at the National Religious Broadcasters in Nashville at the Gaylord Hotel. It's the largest Christian communicator convention in the world. About 3,500 people get to see a lot of dear friends and colleagues in the business, and we'll be doing a couple of shows there from the organization. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Joe, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Thank you for your program. Just wanted to give a shout out to the USA Women's Olympic Hockey Team. I don't know if your listeners had a chance to watch that, but it was a great, great performance. Just a phenomenal effort by the American women. Almost 38 years to the day that the men's hockey team upset the Russians in the Olympic. Everybody thought the Russian team was going to dominate. Everybody thought the Canadian women's team was going to dominate the U.S. team. And it was. If they haven't seen the game, I'd encourage them to watch it.
Yeah, Joe, I was very, very excited. I was very, very excited to see them win. I must tell you, I love the Olympics, but I've been disappointed just in this. There's a liberal agenda. Have you seen it? It's just the LGBT agenda. Watching the figure skating and the one male commentator with the makeup and the hairdo, and then the two men kissing, the two men in a relationship. It just seems like, boy, that agenda has really been forced. Have you seen that?
Yeah, like I said, this was one of the few bright spots of the Olympics. I mean, as I said, there's definitely a liberal left-wing agenda there. But I'd like to encourage your listeners, you know, say that, you know, don't ever tell an American group or an American team they can't do something.
Right.
They can. And more importantly, if God is for them, who can be against them? And that's, you know, something we can hold on to moving forward. If God is for us, it doesn't matter who's against us. So. Shout out to them. God bless them. God bless America.
Yeah, God bless you too, Joe. Thank you so much. Very good points. You know, it's been disappointing. I think I've said on the program that I was a big fan of the Olympics, and it's just been hard to watch some of these things and knowing what the backstories are and the agendas, and using that platform again to push the LGBT agenda. Give us a call, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. How many foster parents out there? What do you think of Betsy Tanner story and then Miracle Hill there in South Carolina? Simply training up people and Christians who want to be there and to stand in the gap for kids that don't have parents or going through difficult times. And here a government agency is coming after them. You know, it's just, we continue to see these, but at the same time, we continue to see good news. The state has a governor that says, wait a minute. These folks are doing good work. They're reaching lots of folks, and they've been at this for 30 some years. And last year served over 400 children in 2017. And 31 of those were adopted into what they call forever homes. And the program has about, 241 foster families currently serving to care for abused and neglected and abandoned children. And yet, whoa, nope, you can't do that because you're just wanting to train up Christians and Christian families, and you're a Christian organization, even though you're helping the least of these among us to have safe. Talk about sanctuary cities. That's what a foster care family is. It's a sanctuary for kids that are going through who knows what and need parents who love them and who have their head on straight. And, well, I can tell you, there's days I wish I had. Growing up in my family, I could have used a foster parent. Anyway, that's another story. Let's go to Ricky in Louisiana. Hi, Ricky. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. I'm just making a comment. Why has all the shootings, except maybe one I can remember in the last 30 years, all of the school shootings since Columbine has always been public government-run schools and not private Christian schools?
Yeah.
Do you know why is that?
I think because I do, but
God
go ahead, Rick.
Prayer is in private Christian schools, yeah. And government schools does not allow that. So there's no morals being taught in public schools. That's why they shoot each other up all the time. But in Christian private schools, there's no shooting going on because they have prayer and Bible reading in private Christian schools, or just even private schools that only name Christian. They have Bible readings allowed and prayer.
Right. Ricky, so, good point.
The liberal media need to pick up on that. Of course, they won't dare say nothing like that, but how can it all happen in public schools, the shootings, and never in Christian private schools?
Very, very good point, Ricky. Thanks for calling from Louisiana. You're listening to Washington Watch. We've got time for a couple more calls. Give us a call, 866-372-7234. Let's go to Nellie in Arkansas. Hi, Nellie. Happy Friday.
Hi, happy to you, too. I think it was your program the other day that was interviewing someone that was frustrated with the group that said that if children are questioning their gender, then they must be homosexual or the opposite gender, otherwise they wouldn't question it. And it brought back to mind when I was in grade school, I spent a lot of time at a friend's house whose brother was retarded.
Mm.
Okay, now you're either born retarded or you're not. But I was questioning, I remember asking my mother on several occasions, am I retarded? And nobody's telling me. So I was questioning whether I was, so does that mean that I must be retarded if I have to question it?
Well, Deli, that's a good point. We know kids are sponges. They take in whatever's around them. That's a very good point. We're out of time, Nellie. Thank you so much. If you were holding, we've run out of time. But don't give up on us. Give us a call next week. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change and though the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains quake at its swelling pride. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. That's Psalm 46, 1-3. I'm Russ Jones, been sitting in for Tony Perkins. You've been listening to Washington Watch. It indeed has been a pleasure to be with you today. Be blessed. Enjoy your weekend. Go hug your kids, your family. And Lord willing, the Lord tarries. We'll see you on Monday.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. Again, that's 1-866-372-7234. 372-7234.